It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 348 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Gilbert Deltres, the creator of a great indie comic called Under the Flesh, as well as another book called Lair. He's got a Kickstarter going on to support the return of the comic. I actually spoke with him originally back a couple of years ago when he was doing the initial issues. There's some changes in the wind, and he's making a strong effort to get back into the game of comics. And I really applaud that. And it's a very rare thing when an indie book that disappears for a little while comes back and can be successful. But I'm hoping that Gil's going to buck the trend of all that good stuff and make this a great book. It's a very interesting turn on the zombie genre, and he's got some really interesting twists that make this book a real joy to read and something that I highly recommend. If you go to Kickstarter and look under the Flesh, you'll find it up there and support it. Of course, he's got a lot of comments on being an indie creator and what that means and what kind of things you have to do. So if you're interested in indie comics, I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get to it. It's always great to talk with Gilbert Deltres, the creator of Under the Flesh and Lair, among other good things. How you doing, Gil?
Hey, Wayne. How's it going, buddy?
It's good to talk with you because, as I understand it, and I know because I pledged to it, you've got a Kickstarter going on. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on with that?
Yeah, sure. It's actually been a long time since I brought Under the Flesh back. I think it's been over 2 years, to be honest, since our last Kickstarter campaign. So, We'll discuss what happened, but yeah, so we're back, and it's out. We're almost 40% funded in 2 days. I've set it for a 21-day Kickstarter, not the norm. I know usually it's about 30 days maybe for a floppy, but I'm trying to, you know, put a little impetus into Kickstarter just to see if it could help with the push, and been nervy so far, but pleasantly surprising in other aspects.
Well, that's good because, you know, you're right, is that most people go 30 days. Why did you go with a shorter time period?
Okay, so I remember when we crowdfunded our second Kickstarter campaign, it was to finance the artwork for issue number 3. And we set that goal literally at $1,000. It was just to cover JL's artwork at the time. And he suggested to do a 2-week Kickstarter, because when you do a Kickstarter for a month, you suffer like major depression, because there's like a midway point where it feels like nothing is going on, where it, like no one is just, I want to call it the black hole, you know, it's just like not like you're just in this void and no one knows, and it's so frustrating and depressing in a way, because as a creator, you're relying on other people to help get your project going. So when that kind of happens, you don't see any kind of movement in that span. It just, it's stressing to say the least. So, you know, his mindset was put it for 14 days. We're already in an accelerated mode. We're at a fast pace. So there's always like an impetus to get us, get movement going, get traction. So I like that. I'm like, man, this sounds good. We just forget that 2-week lull where, you know, things are gloomy and we just go straight into keeping things on your toes. So he pretty much suggested it, and I was bold enough to say, yeah, let's do it, because it's hard. I mean, some people put it even, there's creators that put it maybe for like 40 days. I've seen, you know, 50 days, and it's not like long out graphic novels. It might be, you know, floppies or whatnot. So it's hard. It's hard to just say, yeah, let's do it in 2 weeks. So I did 21 days because I was a little nervous. So, you know what? It's been a while. I said, I'll just do 2 weeks and 6 days, you know? So that's what it came out to, the 21 days, so to speak.
Oh, good. Now, you describe Under the Flesh and the Kickstarter. And by the way, if you go to kickstarter.com, look Under the Flesh, there's a description that's part of the title. Under the Flesh, a psycho-spiritual doomsday horror comic. Talk about that, psycho-spiritual. You know, I've never heard you use that description.
Oh, man. Yeah, Okay, Under the Flesh started as a web comic in 2014, and when I wrote that story, like JL, just finding JL was awesome. So I found him after cycling through a bunch of artists, and we set through on the narrative. We wanted to, you know, play a little homage to zombie stories. Not aside from being a fan, it's just they were kicking at the time. I know now they're kind of like tiresome or they're kind of burnt out, but I still feel there's mileage left there. So I had the story a certain way. Once we had the first two Kickstarters done and we went into that lull, I kind of went back and I revisited the story, and I mean from issue 3 onwards is where like a overhaul began, like a major overhaul. So I started looking into what could make the genre fresh as far as, you know, undead narratives are concerned. I try to look at what could be lacking as far as comics, as far as just stories in general. And I felt like the spiritual mixed with an apocalypse, because every time when you talk about the apocalypse, the end of days, and I mean, I'll just throw The Walking Dead in there. Like, I love The Walking Dead. I love Kirkman's writing on that. And the show, I think it's okay, but I'm a fan of the comic more. But I feel like there's always questions that are left unanswered. And I feel like if you have something as drastic and mind-blowing as an apocalypse where you have these undead figures coming back to life, I want an explanation that goes beyond just a virus. So that's where the psycho-spiritual doomsday all coalesced into a title or a tagline.
Okay. So, yeah. So there's a description that you also put in there. It says, a super soldier with untapped power tries to keep his group alive against devilish fiends and a new world order during the apocalypse.
Right.
Now, talk to me about well, you got to talk about who the main character is. I mean, you know, right. He's right in the very beginning, and I'm really one of the fortunate ones. I actually have a copy right in front of me as I'm talking with you, because for a while we actually sold your comic here and there.
Yes, I appreciate that. You and Rich were amazing guys, man. Awesome.
Yeah, and I was reading, and Lieutenant Lobos is the main guy, and he's in the middle of – and it's so early in the book, I don't think it spoils anything. So you're being injected with cell-fusing nanobots that fight viruses, boost strength, and enhance cognition. And, of course, while he's in the middle of that, the person giving him the shot actually goes – what's the word that you use for them again? You don't say zombies, you say –
Yeah, fleshers. We call them a bunch of things. Well, one of them is spooks. Like, I have it like, you know, in a zombie, I mean, you can't call them zombies, right? That's the thing. Like, you just don't call them zombies. So you got walkers or creeps or whatever. So I have different factions call them different things. But Ruben will call them spooks. Other people call them fleshers. But yeah.
And of course, what happens is after this happens to him, after he's gotten the super soldier business injected into him, he goes off to find his true love, whose name is Dinah. And lucky for him, he finds her, which is a little unusual for, you know, usually these zombie stories, they're dead as doornails. So I thought that was a nice twist. It actually adds a lot of heart to the story, because you get a sense as to why he's defending her.
Yeah, Mr. Lobos is a very, I mean, he might seem, when you read in this character, like he might come across as the stereotypical jock or just, you know, always pissed off at the world. But like, eventually we'll uncover more of those layers as we progress through the story arc. And I grew up a lot on movies, comics, video games growing up as a kid. And for some reason, like when you start a video game, you start at like kind of like, I guess you want to say like level one, until you start learning little skills here and there, and you progress till you get to like level 99, you know. So my whole thing is to have a character where he doesn't know what he can do right off the bat, you know. So I just, in an apocalypse setting, I also thought that was something unique as well.
aside from how you picked up on how he finds his true love, usually they stretch, you know, for so long trying to find this person. Or so I'm trying to I borrow on what, you know, the zombie tropes or whatnot, and I kind of flip them on their head, so to speak. I'm trying to keep Under the Flesh fresh, because I already know, as a fan of the genre himself, I already know they've been run into the ground. So it's like, I want people, when they come across the story, they're like, okay, this guy has a lot of stuff going on. Devilish fiends, okay, these are the zombies, but then they're not. You'll eventually see how they are not. The New World Order, right? I mean, sometimes the world's always put in the ground, and then that's it. You know, I feel like, hey, wouldn't the government have some sort of backup plan? I mean, the government has contingency plans for everything, you know, even a zombie apocalypse. So I like to say, hey, when you think everything's going down, like, guess what? Government's back, you know, and they got their own army, and they're doing things in ways that you wouldn't even expect, because hey, the world's already done, so they could be risky.
Now, there's something in that, the way that you've written this is a plot point that just drives me crazy. It's the plan. He's with a group of women mostly. He does come across another guy, but my understanding is that, especially early in the process here, it's men that get affected by this, not women, which just always fries my brain every time I try to wrap my head around it.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because I understand, you know, there's some growth going to happen, some changes are probably going to take place as we move along. Talk about that, because that's one thing I think that makes your book unique, that stands out.
Mm-hmm. So, again, and just being a fan of the genre, I'm like, okay, how can I make something fresh out of something stale, right? How could I make something interesting out of something that's pretty banal in some senses? So, I mean, I said, hey, they're always infecting, right? They're always infecting men, women, boys, everyone's infected. So I'm like, what if just men for some reason are infected with this, so to speak, virus, right? With this so-called virus. I felt like people are going to be racking their brains, because there's not every man is infected, right? You see, there's still a bunch of other male characters in the story. So it kind of begs that question, and that question will be answered. Mm-hmm. So I did it in a way where I'm spoon feeding you what seems like crazy BS, but then, you know, once you're digesting and once it's going down, it's like, aha, there's a satisfaction there. I'm not going to leave anything unanswered or unopened. I have too much of that in the zombies material I grew up on and loving, and I'm like, we need closure. So I'll make sure that question that you have, that plot point that you feel like, hey, why is it just men? It's going to be answered. There was a method for that madness.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I like all that good stuff. I like when something happens and I don't understand the why, and you don't necessarily tell me right away. I want to figure it out, or at least spend some time analyzing it and trying to figure out what's going on. So I think that's a great thing about the book. Now, saying that, there are a lot of interesting female characters in this book.
Yes.
And I know there's one in particular that you have said has kind of caught on, you know, during the and that's Jewel. Do you want to talk about Jewel a little bit?
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. I love Jewel. What can I say? I mean, we know there's a lot of tough female characters in movies and pop culture, and it was just something about bikers and the whole biker culture. And from what I know, I'm not so versed, right? I only know so much, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like, from what I understood and from what I saw, I felt like there's a lot to have a woman there that's just been through so much in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Leading up into an apocalypse, and it gets to the point where it just boils over, and she's just reached her limit, but yet even with all that, still finds a way to keep on going. And that's Jewel in a nutshell right there. She's just embodies that, you know, that no matter what, never say die. Even when I felt like I've died 10 times already, I'm just still going to move forward against all the odds. Even when the people I love and support me and push me and keep me going, guess what? Are dead. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's Jewel, man. She has a special place. I hope she becomes something special. I hope this story could fund so we can see, you know, what I have planned for her. But I love her.
Now, one of the things in your writing, too, that I particularly like is that you have a lot of variety in your women characters.
You know, Dinah is something different from Jewel, and then you've got like other characters, and they're all very different from each other. And my thing about women characters, and people listen to the podcast know I go on about this all the time, is the fact that especially leads, there's some women who want leads to be very maternal. You know, they're going to be motherly. They're going to talk through their problems. They're not going to do that. Jewel, of course, is nothing like that. But you've got some amongst them that are a little more along those lines. So talk about developing, you know, different kinds of women characters to be a part of the comic.
I feel like, I guess now, I feel at this time, as far as comics are concerned, there's so much women have to offer. And I feel like, if we keep them relegated to that, you know, mother hen type figure, that's fine because instinctually that, you know, they can lean towards that. But I felt if you're going to have a story where most of the virus infects men or what have you, right? What's left for the women? Like, how will they react? How will they adapt? Right? What, like, well, how's that affecting them? So in creating a narrative and you have seven female characters, I mean, it becomes a challenge. And to be honest with you, I mean, I didn't really look that much into how to flesh out all the women. I guess as a whole, I didn't look at it. I just looked at each individual part. And that's how I kind of went through fleshing every little bit. And they stood out and they had a sense of character. Each one was individual. So, I mean, that was just, I guess you could call it writer's blind luck, you know, but for me as a writer, I want to make things as organic as possible because it's very hard to create stories. It's very hard to create characters people care about. It's hard to create something someone wants to get invested in. There's so much content out there and it's hard to step outside of the norm and to shine yourself. So I feel like if you want to embody that, you have to be meticulous to a fault, but at the same time, don't like stress the small stuff. You know what I mean? Like kind of let things flow. As a writer, that's hard to do because we tend to be outlining everything, looking at every little nook and cranny. But there comes a point if you do that too much, like your work will suffer. So I feel like once you kind of got the idea of the characters tend to just be themselves and write themselves pretty much. And that's what's going on with Under the Flesh. And I'm grateful for that, that they're, at least from what you said, someone savvy enough like you that know, you know, that digest all these narratives could figure out, hey, you know what? This is some pretty decent writing going on. They're not all, you know, copy-pasted female characters.
Well, like just one character, for example, whose name is Salma. And we see her at one point, she's a Muslim, but what is she doing? But she's reading the Bible, which is, you know, unusual, you know, a very unusual place for that. And then we see other ones as well. You've got Tabby, who's like a teenager, who's still a teenager, even though the world's crumbling around her, which is kind of funny to read.
Exactly.
You've got all these other ones, too. And you've got the one who's trying to tell Lobos what to do. And other people get angry because she does that. So there's all this. It's interesting to see the conflict going on. His name is Esther, I think is her name. And so you've got all these different characters interacting, and they're not in the same place or they're not responding the same. And I really found that very enjoyable because, you know, guys tend to look at situations like this, and probably we're not far from each other in how we view these things. But women tend to look at circumstances like this differently. And to go like you did and take them from different perspectives, it really, I think, made this, you know, the all the characters really, you know, blossom to me and feel very real. So I thought that was a really great way to make these characters different from each other so that we really cared about what they were going through. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, to touch on that, the perspective for me it's what makes a difference. Like, I wanted to put a zombie narrative going on where you see a diverse makeup, but at the same time, they tick in ways that just will be normal to an extent. Even though there's an apocalypse going around, you have characters in a space, the world is crumbling, the world's ending, yet you see a Muslim reading a Bible. Why? Is a Muslim reading the Bible, right? Yet you have like a teenager who's still trying to be a teenager, you know, like, so I felt like it was a perfect landscape to mix these different perspectives together, but show how, in a way, they can still come across as genuine and not be a gimmick with an agenda. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm. Well, I like that. You know. But of course, then you've got other guys too. You've got the guy that was in the library. Talk a little bit about him.
Paul. I love Paul. I mean, I love all my characters. Am I saying that? I love everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Paul, he's okay. Paul's that guy where he's educated. He's smart. He knows a lot. But he's chicken shit scared, part of my French, you know? And he's just the one that he sees reason. Yet him and Ruben always clash. I kind of did that for a reason. Like, I wanted to have, even though he's like kind of weaker, but he still will get his voice across. He'll still challenge Ruben, you know? So even though Ruben's a big muscle super soldier, like, you still have this skinny guy, you know, just challenge him at every chance, you know? And like, that's just a testament to Paul, because he's knowledgeable. He's smart. He's not willing to back down. So I felt even in some instances through panel shots, you kind of see him like kind of hide and scared. He's not afraid of voicing his opinion when the time comes. And you're going to see a good shot of that, a scene in issue 4, hopefully we get to it, where Paul starts eventually coming into his own, and he has his little thing too.
Well, that's good, because, you know, not everybody's a super soldier, which is something I really like. Because, you know, if you get like 5 super soldiers, there's just not much that you can challenge them with. But to have, right, even with the women as different as they are, the men are also different. And, of course, there are motorcycle gangs running around. And, of course, the guys, you know, you're planting clues as to what's really going on when you do those kinds of things. Because most people think the guys are going to fade away or go away. But then you see other men that survive, and of course then you have to say, well, now what's the difference? What is making that happen? What makes some people survive and others not? I you know, that
exactly. That I know that question is arising, especially from readers of zombie lore. They're like, okay, why is it not affecting every man? If there's a certain group, why is it like, I know that it's like bubbling in the back of their brain. So like I said, definitely gonna have a reason just for that. But yeah, so that's awesome.
So I like that stuff. Now, I've read issues 1 and 2. My understanding is that, okay, well, why don't we talk about where we are? Okay, you've got in the Kickstarter, you can order up to 3, I think, 1 through 3, and you can order a number 4 as well. I haven't seen that one yet. The only ones I've seen are 1 and 2, I think. So when I'm pledged, I put a pledge in. I put it so I could get the 1 through 4 as well as Lair.
But okay, cool. Thank you.
Because I like that kind of stuff. I want to know, you know, I always wondered what was going to happen next. Talk about where we are, because, you know, you were saying I was watching the video on the Kickstarter, and you were saying the JL's schedule was such that he really couldn't continue to go on with these things. So you've got the team from Lair are coming over to help. What are the changes going to be? Are the covers what's going to change? Because you've got the insides all pretty much, I think, really nicely put together.
Yeah, the insides, we're not even – for the first 3 issues, those, you know, we're not touching those insides. I mean, JL, it's sad that his schedule was so bombarded with Marvel work, but at the same time, it's good. But his Marvel work that he was doing was projects like – I guess they're promotional type products, when like Marvel does like a team up with Gillette or, you know, Western Union type things. So he was working on that. So it was great because it is Marvel, but I don't think it was what he wanted, to be honest. But it's most like, hey, it's a foot in the door until something could come across, something could come along. He also did, I think, Spider-Man Homecoming, it came with a comic, the inner comic that came with that. He did the art for that. So he's blossoming on his own, flourishing with Marvel. And like I said, I cannot complain. And I'm not the type of person that will ever be upset about that. I was encouraging. I was happy. And he was even saying, hey, some of the work from UTF number 3 is kind of what helped him get. He used that, some of that work, to showcase some of the editors, and that what kind of got him plugged back into working with Marvel. So I was happy. His schedule kind of kept him from working on Under the Flesh. And my whole thing is like, okay, I can't really see anyone but JL do this. Like, me and him, it's like, I don't know, it's like parting. It's like, you know, you grew up with your dad and you're like, you know what, dad, I'm going on my own, but I know I don't want to go on my own. You know, it's like kind of like I didn't want to. And I understood I have a kind of a little fan base with Under the Flesh. It's small, very small, but they showed their support and it was monstrous. So my whole thing was like, okay, I owe it to them to keep this story going. Mm-hmm. I said, if I keep waiting until something comes, I mean, it could be 2019, 2020, and I started this project. And I told you, I like closure. Just how you guys want to know what happens, why not all the men are infected, I'm going to explain that. Mm-hmm. I want to finish this book as much as I want JL to work on it. But at the same time, I don't want to sacrifice the story. So I kind of put Lair on the side, put it on a back burner, and I said, you know what? Back to the drawing board. I did the Headshot Horror label, which was kind of like for one-shot projects. I had the Lair story going in my head for a while, and I kind of from the ground up put the team together. Mm-hmm. We were able to successfully crowdfund Lair for $10,000, a big project. Mm-hmm. We finished the artwork. We're just trying to get printing done. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me, I'm like, maybe I could kind of have them jump on Under the Flesh. I was kind of nervous, to be honest with you, because, I mean, sometimes in the real art world, in comic books, when we see artists switch off, it could be kind of jarring to the reader, you know? And I'm just starting a fresh comic. I'm 3 issues in, and I'm already switching artists, so I was kind of worried about that. I know Kirkman and Moore had their little issue with The Walking Dead. I mean, you see the art for the first couple of issues of The Walking Dead, and then you see the ad alert. You see there's a difference. But, I mean, mm-hmm. for me, the story ran perfect. It was just that good of a story. Mm-hmm. But I was just hesitant, Wayne. I didn't know what to expect or what to do. And I brought it to their attention. They were excited. They jumped on board. And now we got the campaign going. And the idea is to reboot the covers of Under the Flesh 1, 2, 3. Even though I love the covers, but trying to, you know, I guess keeping the interior, the inside line art the same, but just with the rebooting of the covers and then going into the issue 4 to just try to make it as seamless as possible with the art direction.
Because you're not the first one that's had to do that. You know, Bob Sally, who does Salvagers, the guy who did the artwork with that had wanted to go and do other projects, and he's kind of stayed on as like a advisor type of role. But you know, Bob's has done 2 different artists, I think, at this point on Salvagers. Oh, after that point. And you know, the thing of it is you've got reality gets in the way of comics every once in a while. And you know, if JL gets to work for Marvel, you know, well, you know, heck, good for him. And but it's not going to help your book get out.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, and so you have to, you know, cheer him on, and, you know, and that's good. But the thing to do is, I think it's also wise to make covers from the team that's going to pick it up in 4, because that's going to make some continuity. Thank you.
Anyway. That's exactly what I was aiming for with that, just to have some. So people who back the old Kickstarters, awesome. You got those, I guess we could call them retro type covers or from our first, you know, initial JL covers. But the continuity, I wanted, you know, just some uniformity and going forward, so they could see, okay, cover 1, cover 2, cover 3, cover 4, you know, the new artist on board. Mm-hmm. Then you get JL's work on the inside, but then issue 4 is just like boom, boom, boom. It'll just hope kind of mesh in where, you know, it wouldn't be that jarring to the reader.
And I think I saw on the website you've got some of the pages that has been written, have been drawn by the new art team. And I don't see much of difference. You know, I think that they've done a great job of maintaining the feel of Under the Flesh. So I'm kind of happy. I think it's going to be something to look forward to.
Awesome, man. It means a lot, Wayne. Yeah, the guy we got on there, Sebastian Navas. I mean, I just told him, this is Under the Flesh. These are the characters, but do them in your vision. But after seeing that finished art page, or like not finished, but inking, so to speak, he's mm-hmm. penciling, works traditional too. You you see the spirit there. It's kind of like it's well maintained. It's not so drastic where it comes across as alarming. It keeps in with the scope of what we're trying to do. So that's just genius on his part, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, well completed.
And the faces, you know, the maintaining of Lobos, is his face looks very similar to what we've seen in the other issues and stuff. So, you know, that kind of thing is going to be important. It's like what Bob Sally went through with Salvagers. You know, when the new person came on, I honestly couldn't tell the difference. I wasn't sure where the one
stopped. That's good, man. Okay.
So that's the kind of thing I know you're aiming for. You don't want to lose their creativity, but on the other hand, you want people who are buying the book because they like what they've seen to, you know, not to be going like, "Ooh, what happened?" You know, we don't.
Yeah, not that much of a jump. I've read books. I'm sure you've read as well. Yeah. When you see that, it's like a shock. It's almost like you just got zapped. It's like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, it feels like violation almost. You're like, my eyes just been violated. I'm not good with this. And then, you know, you don't feel comfortable. But yeah. In some cases, you move on. That kind of hit me the first with The Walking Dead, where it hit me. And but this, like I said, the story was so good. I just, after that, you just don't even realize it.
Yeah. It's true. Now, where are we now? You've got, how many issues are in the can? You've got 1 through 3, and they're working on 4?
Yes. Okay. So right now, we were able to finance 1 through 3. We're able to complete 1 through 3, literally done, everything done with 1 through 3. We're picking up with issue 4 in this Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. Issue 3, you need to catch up on. Things are getting very interesting as far as what you said, the comment about the super soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drop a little spoiler there. I want to say Ruben was the only one.
Okay.
And we kind of have like a little New World Order resurging. And that's what we have, which is called the NRI. It's our National Resurgence Initiative. That's our government initiative, our government army soldiers. That's where that's their way of trying to clean up, you know, the apocalyptic mess and reform and get people to, you know, to reboot society in a way. So that's their role. And we have one, you get introduced to him, and I don't throw it out there. Mm-hmm. But I just make a subtle reference, and I'm sure you'll pick up on it, with one of the characters, and it kind of leads in towards, okay, this guy is more than meets the eye. He must be Ruben's equivalent. Mm-hmm. But the difference is Ruben doesn't know what his capabilities are, mm-hmm. but this guy, he's been through the gamut. He's been through the boot camp. He knows what he can do. So I felt like it would be interesting to see two super soldiers, one who's well vetted and the other one who's kind of like, you know, training wheels, trying to figure out what he can do, to see them get in on, you know, in combat. I thought would be interesting leading down the line. So, but yeah, 4, 5, and then 6. We're trying to wrap it up in 6 issues and. Oh.
That was my next question. I was going to ask how many you're going to do. Now, I was kind of curious. There's a page in which there's a recap and finished art preview, and I noticed that it's called Under the Flesh, and then you've got the word prejudiced underneath. Is that where that's going to be important as we move into number 3 and 4?
It will for one of the characters I'm introducing. It's the character I was telling you about. His name is Chase Dalton. He's from the NRI perspective, and I kind of threw that in there. I feel like once you kind of gauge Dalton's psyche, his mindset, you could kind of see where the whole prejudice thing kind of comes into play. I wouldn't say it's a major thing, but it piggybacks on what Dalton is. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He is as a character,
because often happens, and of course it's not a bad idea to if you're doing number 3 to give start to make transition changes for it, so that's right. Not a bad thing either, so that's a good way to go and do that. But I've loved what I've read of it, and I can't wait to see more of it. I think it is unique as far as undead stories go in the sense, and that you've got stuff that you can unfold and you know, keep us going along the way, which I think is great. 6 books. I can't imagine you're going to wrap everything up in 6 issues. Are you thinking about more? Let's just say that the Kickstarter goes well and, you know, things go on and people are interested.
Everything hinges on the crowdfunding. If it would be my dream, it'd be to make this an ongoing arc. But as a comic reader, one thing I'm overwhelmed by is the stories, the content. It's hard to keep up. I mean, if you think about it, my pull list, I'll go and maybe it'd be like a month and I'll go buy it. I just got a plastic bag stacked with a bunch of comics. And I try to pick a day where I'm going to like read a few. And it's just so much to catch up on. I got Oblivion Song. I got Barrier. I got Weatherman. I got some of the stuff from Aftershock that's been crazy. Like, so it's like, how do you catch up on all this goodness? Mm-hmm. So my thing as a creator, I'm like, okay, if I make a comic, right, 6 issues, I wanted to be the cutoff. Could I go more? Yes, of course. But I kind of want to leave it where I can leave it there if I have to and move on to something else. Mm-hmm. And if things start picking up later down the line, you know, I could always go back to the pipeline and just bring out stuff that's been put aside. Mm-hmm. But I definitely want to get closure on this project. I'll end it in a way where there is closure, but the door is, it's like the front door is closed, but the back door is just wide open, mm-hmm. you know? So that's just how I'm going to leave it with Under the Flesh. And, you know, hopefully things are successful with the Kickstarter. If there's a demand and an audience and I could just keep it going, that could be an option, you know, we could entertain.
Mm-hmm. This book just works for me. It's, you know, talk about Walking Dead. This could mm-hmm. easily be on AMC or Sci-Fi, in my opinion. This, the story, it's, you know, I could see these characters.
You know. I think in this how we're going, I feel like there's definitely room, and there's a lot of people suffering from the Walking Dead withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm mm-hmm. one of them. You know, I saw faithfully up to the 7th season. I kind of, you know, went back to Netflix after a while. I couldn't catch up. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'll wait for Netflix to come out for the next half. But I feel like even watching the Walking Dead and its current, I still feel like, man, there's so much room for navigation. And I feel like if Under the Flesh in a nice, happy, beautiful world with rainbows and unicorns gets picked up by some type of producer, they'll see that it's a genre that people love. Okay, mm-hmm. like it or not, people. So the zombie genre is a thing. There's diehard supporters. You got zombie walks. You got zombie. Like, it's not ever gonna go away.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we can mess around and play around and tweak things and stay true to the origins while also just making things, you know, unique and intriguing. So I felt like as a TV show or something, it can definitely work. Mm-hmm. I was also
going to mention too. You mentioned about how you get behind. Do you remember when Rebirth came out from DC? I'm a big DC fan, so when Rebirth came out, they were printing almost every comic twice a month, and yes. I got so yes. behind on their stuff. And finally, one Saturday, I said, "Okay, that's it. I'm doing nothing but catching up on Rebirth." And it took me all afternoon. I read all the books, and when it was done, I was caught up. But it took me like 4 or 5 hours to catch up on all those books. But
it's,
you know,
a lot.
After that, I had to say, okay, from now on, I've got to be able to keep up with it. That's what I got to do. So I've been, you know, ever since then, I've been doing it. Of course, they've also cut back the production, too. They're not twice a month, most of them. They're mm-hmm. gone back to once a month. So
I think maybe they felt like the twice a month could have been, maybe, I don't know, numbers-wise, could have been not as what they thought. But it's overwhelming, man. I feel like I get anxiety when I see my pile of shame on the desk. It's like, and then, you know, I'm a new dad. I just, you know.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, because now you've got reality. Talk about reality getting in the, you know, in the way.
Yeah, it gets in the way. So it's, oh my God.
You've got a child you're raising, aren't you?
And I got a little guy. Yeah, he's 8 months old.
Wow.
Wait, look at that. Even though, goodness, Wayne, he's 7 months old. He just turned 7 months old. He's big, though. But yeah, he's 7 months old. But trying to juggle, you know, work, you know, family time, comic book creation time, and then just reading and enjoyment of what we like to do. You know, there's always me time. As much as I love doing comics and writing comics, there's a lot of pressure and stress that goes with that. So sometimes I just want to cuddle up, mm-hmm. you know, with a good comic book, mm-hmm. with a good book, and just read, like you said, you caught up on Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
I got to catch up on a couple of the titles myself. But that, I feel like it's so rewarding when we get that moment. Mm-hmm. But when reality sets, it's just hard to find that moment. But as creators, we got to make sure we do our due diligence to make that time available, because much of writing is also enjoying other people's work, getting ideas, and from that, seeing those ideas brainstorm and branch into other ideas. And it's just a way to keep the mind fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because I have to mention, there's, I don't know if you know who Caleb Toussaint is. He does an indie comic called Alter Life. And he was in the middle of Alter Life when his wife had a child. And, you know, he had to, you know, it just took time away from his being able to write and stuff. He's got things on schedule and everything's going real well. But, you know, it was just, there's something about being an indie creator that makes you want to create other things, apparently. And children seems to be one of those things that indie creators make a lot. So I got a huge kick out of that when I heard him. And I did think about you, because you had a child too coming along. And there are other ones too. I think Mr. Sally has children that he's raising as well.
Yeah,
so.
I've seen his Instagram a few times, and there's always a gaggle of bunch of kids on there. So I'm like, I look at him and what I – Bob Sally, we don't talk that much, but there's a moment that I'll never forget that he told me when I was just started with Under the Flesh. He's like, commit to trying to get – to one convention as a creator, you know, as an exhibitor, as a, you know, just to get yourself out. He's like, just do one a year. That was his thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I got you. I'll try to do one a year. Mm-hmm. I haven't done one a year yet.
Okay, and, well, you came to New York one time, New York Comic Con, while I was up there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll frequent as a fan for sure. That I'll do as a fan for sure. But what Bob was saying, you got to do it as a creator.
Yeah.
So I think 2019 is where that new leaf turns and you know, started hitting the gauntlet there.
See, the thing is, and I've mentioned this to other people too, is that one of the really important things, and you may not make much money at a convention, but what you will make are connections. People who can, one way or another, help your stuff get along. And, you know, I there's so many times that, you know, I go with Richard, you know, Ray Rivera from Stabbity Bunny, and we go to conventions, and it's just astounding the connections you make. Like, we were just in Cincinnati, and who did we make connections with but Mike Zeck and John Beatty, who were across the aisle from us. And, you know, Rick ended up talking with them, and we ended up next to J.M. DeMatteis from Justice League International and stuff. And, you know, we came away with all these neat connections, you know, that I just, you know, see, I think that to me, and Bob Sally, too, and that's how I met James Haig, was at a convention. I was going around looking for new books, as I always do these days, to talk with people about. And I came across his comic, and I wrote the preface for his first trade paperback. I talked about the fact that I saw the book and I bought number one, and I went back to the table I was helping and I read it, and then I had to go back and get number two, which he had, and I took that back and read it. Then I had to go back and get number three, and I took that back and I loved it. And I was just, then I went back and said, I have to interview you. This is a great book, you know, kind of stuff. And that's, those kinds of connections are really important, I think, for helping you not only financially but support wise if you've got a question, you know, somebody like, you know, Richard, and you can talk with him and stuff like that. But there are, you know, he doesn't know everything, and there are other people who can supply question answers for you. And so that's why I would say, you know, I back Bob up on that one. I think that going to a convention, it's, you meet people, you know, after the convention's done for the day, a bunch of creators will get together and go out and eat together and stuff, and you make those kinds of important support groups, I think, that are going to be, they're going to help you keep going. I mean, one thing I wanted to mention to you, though, was that, you know, you're doing something that very few indie creators do, and that is to come back. Usually when people disappear or they're gone, it's done. I mean, they're not going to come back. They're not going to do any more of the book. It's over. So I have to applaud you for that. You're coming back is quite an accomplishment. I have to, it's really rare in indie comics, and I think it's something you should be congratulated for, because, you know, I love the book, and I was sad when it kind of, when we lost track of it for a little while. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more. That's the thing I'm really excited about.
Well, Wayne, I appreciate it. You're evidence of one of these connections that we talk about, because if it wasn't for you back in Under the Flesh, the first one, you know, 2014, and introducing me to Rich, I mean, he's just been a mentor. I mean, like, he's a mentor, and I could honestly say that. He's someone that definitely I look to and support, and I feel like what you're saying, and I feel once I start, like I said, quote me on this, okay? 2019 is where I at least hit one or two conventions faithfully as a creator, because I need to make connections and I need to be part of a circle. I want to be part of that camaraderie as an indie creator, getting out there with other people that are like-minded, trying to just, you know, get out there. So to come back is very hard, and I'm glad I'm able to come back, and with people like you guys helping me and the supporting it, it makes it worthwhile, and the fight is on.
Right. Well, I'm real happy that you're back, because I love the book, and I still have them sitting near my computer, so I can pull them out and read them every once in a while, because they're great.
Yes, it's
such a great story and so much fun to do. You might think about a local convention, especially if you've got family as a concern.
Yes.
Maybe try to get, like, I don't know, SuperCon, if that's closer to where you are. But, you know, start there and kind of look. What's happening is we've started going, like, to New York and San Diego.
And the French are not San Diego.
Yeah, we've been to San Diego twice now, and it's an amazing experience. Awesome. I've got to tell you, it's just the wildest.
One thing I'll do is, I could imagine. Oh my God, San Diego, New York is amazing. I could, but San Diego is the big daddy of them all. So to be there twice, that's just a testament of how you guys, how you just, you guys are as hardcore as it comes in the comic book game. So I hope to follow in your footsteps. I definitely, one day, Wayne, if we could all be in San Diego, I might have a tear trickle down my eye because it'll be just joy. Like, man, this is what it is. You know, it's not about making the money. It's just about being in a place with other people and spreading, you know, spreading the comic book love, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure that's going to happen because you're making great strides towards that. I have to tell you a quick Baltimore Comic-Con story. There was, everybody was up there, and there was Dan DiDio running around, and Jeff Johns was there, and this was, you know, before the Green Lantern stuff. And we didn't know it, but at that time, in the background, he was talking to Dan DiDio about how he wanted to bring back Hal Jordan as Green Lantern.
Nice.
That was going on in the background, and it was a couple of months. And what's so funny was my brother Randy, the twin brother, he went up to DiDio. He saw him there, and he said, you know, he says, I wish you'd bring back Hal Jordan as Green Lantern. And DiDio looked at him like, do you know something that I should – and he kind of said, well, you know, you might get your wish. You never know. And it was a few months later that they announced that he was going to bring back Green Lantern, and that, of course, took off. But see, there's a case of when something happened in the background, you know, it was something was happening, you know, there was convention stuff going on, but there was stuff that was happening, the connections were being used, and something really great came out of it. So I always, that's why I recommend it to you. But I'm, you know, you've got to do reality first, and so I think that's great that you got your things are going real well with your family and that you're able to get back. I like I said, that is something to you know, you should be real happy with that, because very few, I mean, I've come to love a book and then it just vanishes and I go looking for it and it's nowhere to be found.
It's painful, yeah.
It's nice to see your book come back. I mean, it's really great. I can't wait to see what you're going to do in the next couple of books. And I know this is going to be a real successful Kickstarter. Let's see, it needs to finish by Monday, October 8th at 12 midnight.
Yes.
So don't wait till then. The thing to do is get out there now. You know, don't have your daily heart attack, as we call it. Get out there. You're in pretty good shape as we're recording this. And, of course, it's going to be a little late at this post. But
fingers crossed, yeah.
But we're going to, you know, I think this is going to be great. And I hope that this podcast helps get some more attention.
Because I appreciate that.
Your book is a great one. It deserves to be successful. And it deserves to have us get more. And I'd like to see Lair, too. I think that all these books are great stuff. So, you know, Gil, just keep it up and, you know, keep going. I think you're on the right road.
Oh, man, Wayne, thank you so much for the support and the encouraging words. And, yes, sir, like a good boxer, you get knocked down, you get back up. You know, you just keep on going, fighting through those championship rounds. So I'm trying to get to the championship round.
Well, keep on going. You're well on your way, I think, and I can't wait for more.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Hal Jordan of Earth, Green Lantern of Sector 2814. The Viceroy of Demrak 7 claims that when we assigned you to police crucial peace negotiations, you punched him in the face. Is this true?
No, sir. I punched the Viceroy in the stomach. Then I headbutted him in the face. Sir.